forensic research.
Thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge my co-workers, Peter Self and Mark Raven, up in the top left-hand corner, the right-hand corner there. They've just won the very prestigious cup for quantitative clay mineral analysis. You couldn't have a better team in terms of doing soil forensic work or clay mineralogy. So that's called the Reynolds Cup. It's given every 2 years, and there's about 130, 150 people who participate in this. Now, what I propose to do is give you an overview, just in a couple of minutes, of what soil forensics is about and why it's a powerful tool. The focus of this talk is more to do with the challenges that we have in terms of doing soil forensic work, and that's predominantly when you have very tiny or small particles of soil, particularly clay, and how we can overcome that problem. And the way I'm going to do this is to present to you 8 case studies to show you the range of X-ray techniques, because in soil forensics work, all the cases we do are mostly homicide, in fact all homicide or rape. Those that go to a jury, so we don't do minor crime, we only do the major homicide cases. And at the moment our centre, the Centre for Australian Forensic Soil Science, do a case a week. So I can tell you this, that funding for a lot of other things might be declining, but I can tell you crime is on the increase, not only in Australia but around the world. So this is a booming industry. We've just set up an international forensic fraternity, mainly through the geological peoples. We've got so those of you who are interested, I can introduce you to that. But I'm going to show you a range of techniques. One of the reasons why we choose X-ray is that it gives us more confidence if we're going to be participating in a homicide case, and particularly if you're going to present this to a jury and you've got some very clever lawyers that you've got to be cross-examined by. But that's not to say that we don't use other techniques, as I'll show you. Of the most important would be the pathological or the visual techniques using ordinary microscopes. So why then is soil a powerful trace? I'll go through these just very briefly because of the time problems. Soil is actually quite individualistic. As you know, in the US there'd be hundreds of thousands of soil types, and within that you'll have lots of different types of clay or soil particles. Soils are actually very easy to characterise, particularly if you're using XRD or even looking at it visually. You can do it in a very quick, quick period of time. In fact, much quicker than you could do DNA. It has a very high probability of transfer or retention. Clay sticks, and I can tell you so does sand. It can get into everything. And you only need a tiny amount to do the analysis. It can also be very quickly collected at the crime scene and separated in different ways. Here's the real best one. It's almost invisible. If you have lipstick or blood, the baddie will actually get rid of it very quickly. They won't think soil can ever be used in forensic work. And it's for this reason, at this point in time, that internationally we've agreed not to present CSI movies and all that sort of thing about the use of soils, because in fact we could be giving a lot of secrets away. And of course we do have databases of soils and clays and things around the world. So what are the challenges? Here's a case we did very recently in which some shoes had actually been through a washing machine. I won't give you the details of every case that I'm going to present because they could take a long time. But you can see where I've put an arrow there. Those shoes have been through a washing machine. This lady had tried to murder a colleague of hers and got away and put her shoes through a washing machine. And you can see just a tiny little bit of soil on clay stuck in that grid there. We could use that, and that was more than enough for us to even do an X-ray diffraction. In fact, in this case, we actually use a silicon wafer to sprinkle a little bit of that on the X-ray diffraction and get a powder pattern. And I'll show you that case later on. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this again because of the time factor, but effectively for mostly the jury and for the prosecution and for the lawyers, we've actually developed, if you like, different stages, and we've also developed a manual. So those of you who are interested, I can actually give to you a manual that we've been developing now in its third stage, showing how we conduct a soil forensic investigation. And the first thing we do is to screen, and we use Munsell colour and morphology, soil morphology. The next stage will be to go a bit more detailed, and we do some separation because fine particles will stick on clothing and shoes, and we'll do that separation, mostly less than 50 microns, and we'll always do an X-ray diffraction. It's one of the most powerful techniques, no doubt. If it's a very high case, for example, counter-terrorism or terrorism case, the detectives and the police would say, money is not a problem, go to the next phase, and we would then hit it with just about everything possible, and, as you'll see later on, we'll even go to the synchrotron to do work. In that case, we do much more detailed investigations using other techniques. And then stage four would be to put the whole thing together in terms of combining it all, maybe using soil maps and so on. So that's basically what we would use. So what I'm going to do is basically present to you these cases, and I'll be going through them very rapidly to illustrate to you how powerful X-ray diffraction is. Now, with most cases, you'll see on the right-hand side there the Locott exchange principle. Basically, in forensics, this is basically saying that if one thing has touched another, you'll have a contact trace left behind. And that's the case with clays, iron oxide soils all the time. So effectively, if, for example, in the first case that I'll show for you, are two missing persons. We were presented with a shovel where this baddie was caught with a shovel in the back of his car. He virtually said to the detectives, there's no way you're ever going to find the two people I've murdered. But all we had was a shovel, and the police spent weeks, trying to find where this was. They eventually contacted us, and we managed to use that contact of the contact from where he buried the people to the soil that was on the shovel, and we could use maps and clay mineralogy to locate it. All the other cases are basically the same. They're slightly different. Bodies in wetland, we'd find clay or soil in the clothes. Many of them are on shoes, and it'd be the contact between the shoes, either the soil or the clay inside the shoe or outside the shoe. And we do some environmental forensics in which the soil might be on a rake or shovel or whatever. So what I'm going to do is very quickly go through some of these cases. And the way I'm going to do it is to show you, if we've got lots of soil, how we can do the case. And those are two case studies there, where we use traditional lab work, but with refinement. And I'll show you what we do with some refinement, and I'll show those four cases. I'll then show you a case where we use some micro infrared, because sometimes we do have organic matter in the soil. And then I'll finish off by showing you how we used synchrotron and micro X-ray diffraction techniques. So here's a case, and I'm not going to go through the details of every one, this is the one I described earlier, where soil was found on a shovel in the back of this person's car. He had murdered his mother and his grandmother, and what we did was use as much information and soil morphology information as we could, and we surveyed different quarries and areas with detectives and people. And what we basically found was, we, in terms of using inductive techniques, if you like, worked out that the shovel was obviously operated in a wet place, and it was smacked down from the back. And what we did was analyze the X-ray diffraction pattern of the fine fractions from the quarry and from the shovel. And here you can see two diffraction patterns. I'll see if I can get this thing to work. Okay. So you can see here the black. The black here is from the quarry, the diffraction pattern. The red is actually from the shovel. You can see they virtually are the same. So when we did this work, when we were running the diffraction pattern, we got to about here, and we basically phoned up the detectives and said, look, we've actually found the exact place. To cut a long story short, it took about a week later because they couldn't use any techniques to get into this quarry, and basically they waited until foxes had exposed the bodies, but two bodies were eventually recovered in this area. And that actually set up our centre, and this case was done 10 years ago. And, of course, the person was committed and there wasn't even a trial. Another case. Here's an example of a shoe. This person had committed a crime, ran through a stream, collected a lot of fine material on the shoe, and, of course, we knew from where the person had run through the stream. Here's the gravel. But we know from experience that only the fine material would collect in the shoe. So we separated the fine fraction from the gravel. And when we looked at the diffraction patterns of the two from the actual gravel in the river from the shoe, you can see the diffraction patterns are almost identical. Again, we could present this to the judge because this was a pre-case. And we could convince the judge that there was a case. The person admitted guilt and there was no case. Here's the case I showed you earlier with very fine material in the end of the shoe. And again, where of course you can have lots of material here, we could use a lot of fine material. Here's an example from the shoe where we have lots of material. That would show it there. And you can see this is from the victim because obviously we had lots of material. And when you compare the diffraction patterns, you can see how similar they are. Now, what we've discovered is that it's actually to present an X-ray diffraction pattern to the jury and to the judge is a lot easier because, in fact, you're using a fingerprint pattern. You're actually showing a pattern here, different mineralogical compositions, and you can show the similarity as you would explaining a fingerprint pattern. So from experience, I've found that diffraction is by far the most powerful way to explain to the jury. Although X-ray might be complicated, it's a lot easier than, for example, showing a whole lot of chemical data in a table. And here's the soil from, obviously, the finer material, and you can see, again, the comparison is not as good, but you can see that it is almost similar, even in terms of broadening patterns. Now, here's a case that's even more complicated. I'll try and keep it simple. But effectively, this is a girl that was raped, a 9-year-old girl that was raped. And when the detectives gave me the samples, they gave me the shoe, and they gave me from the actual site where the rape had occurred. And when I compared the patterns, they were very, very similar. In fact, 8 of the 10 minerals were the same. When they showed me and explained to me what had happened, and I realised that, look, this is in fact only less than a kilometre, in fact 500 metres away from where he had actually abducted her, we realised that there was a problem because it was the same soil type. So we had to take extra samples, what we call alibi samples. And the alibi sample turned out to be even closer in terms of identification. And that was when he stood outside the house to make observations. And in this case, 9 of the mineral faces identified were identical. So again, this was easy to present to the jury. Here's a case where, just as a quick one, where soils are found on clothing, very fine material on clothing. And what we did here was actually we could modify the diffraction pattern by cutting the actual shoe and doing the diffraction pattern from the surface of the shoe. Here's an example, and get a diffraction. Not as good. If we did this again now, we would go to the synchrotron. Here's an example of, you can see it's not quite a good fit, but we could get pretty close to identifying it as the same. Again, clays on in this case, this was a cold murder case. You can see the clays sticking onto the clothing, and we could, I'm going to skip this case. Basically, shells, again, diffraction. Here's a case where we've actually got, this is a counter-terrorism case, where particles of volcanic glass are found in the sample. This here happens to be a sample of plastic, which is rutile and calcite. We could never do this from a bulk diffraction. We had to go to almost like a single crystal or particle. And this gave us the clue that we could actually take this goniometer to the synchrotron if a case came up that had fine particles. A case did come up which had bricks in them. So what we did was, we've just completed a case using the synchrotron in which fine particles of brick fragments were found in a soil that are unique to that particular site. And you can see how tiny these particles are, less than 0.5 of a milligram. And from that, we've developed a method of actually doing that same X-ray diffraction pattern in the laboratory, taking the same goniometer to the synchrotron, and from that we can actually determine more quantitatively the different minerals, particularly corundum and cristobalite and malite, because they're quite poorly crystalline. So we did a sample of cutting little tiny brick fragments from bricks from that particular forensic site, running them, these little brick particles, and then running them in the synchrotron, and we could get much better definition. And here's an example of that particular of bricks in the synchrotron, and these are the bricks and the tiny particles done in the laboratory. And you can see we can determine them in the laboratory, but definitely not as well as we would do if we used the synchrotron. So, as a summary, the synchrotron was much, much better in defining particularly cristobalite and malite in bricks that made us determine the exact site of where this happened. So it was a much better technique. So to conclude, effectively, soils are a powerful contact trace. X-ray is non-destructive. It's very rapid. We can do a trace in 30 minutes. Very little sample preparation. And as I've just shown you, synchrotron micro-XRD and laboratory micro-XRD are very powerful methods that can be used, particularly when you want to be confident in convincing the jury that the particular person might or might not have been there. Thank you very much. Yeah. In our manual, we actually have a range of... we're not using the word probability because that's statistical. We don't use Bayesian statistics because that's also a problem. It's actually banned in the US courts. So what we do is we use degrees of likeliness. So we would say if the pattern was exactly the same, 9 out of 10. If it was about quite close, we'd say 7 or 8 out of 10. So, yes, we do use a degree of likeliness, or we'd say there is no likeliness. Okay.